I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 543. You're going to hear more about Destiny 2. That's a threat.
And a promise. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming to gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And I am like 65% healthy.
It's better than the 24% you were last week.
Yeah, it was more like 22 and a half last week, let's not lie. But I can breathe through a nostril, so hey, I'm winning 50, at life.
50% there. There you okay. go.
Right, like right there, I'm just like, boom, almost back to being human. Now if I can get rid of all this damn congestion, get my electrolyte game back up, oh shit, I'm gonna be at like 98%. You fools won't be able to touch me. And I know I'm not at 100% because I am getting my ass handed to me in Injustice 2 by the damn computer. So I know I'm still off. But that's okay, I'm getting better.
One step at a time, bro. One step at a time.
One step at a time. So, you know what I did? You know what I did? I stopped playing Injustice 2. You know what I did?
What did you start doing?
I went back to playing Call of Duty because you don't have to be well to play Call of Duty.
Oh. You don't need skills for COD.
No, you don't need skills. Not to play... Well, let me say this. To play the campaign, the single-player campaign, you don't need skills.
Okay.
You don't need skills to play Infinite Warfare. You just don't.
Poof. Well then.
Not the single player campaign. But the single player campaign is fine. But like, seriously, you could be feverish and make it through.
360 no skill. I'm living proof. Barf.
Okay. And we know, like, my shooter skills are not great.
Even when you're healthy.
Great. Even when I'm healthy. Okay, you've played Destiny with me. I'm okay.
Right.
But, like, if you need a headshot bringer, that's you. That's not me.
I know. Which is okay. Why I don't ask you for headshots. I just ask you for cover.
All right? I run cover, okay? You need cover fire? I got you.
I know.
Hail bullets all day, day.
Day.
Okay? You want to play Overwatch? I will heal you. I will buff you. I run healer like what? Not so much a tank. Just not.
Reinhardt is my go-to.
Okay? Like, I love Reinhardt. Okay? But, fucking Mercy, all day long, I got you. Just protect me, because I can't take bullets for shit.
Right.
And that's the only thing that, like, pisses me off in Overwatch, is when I get with a team that does not respect the, oh shit, we should keep the healer alive.
Here's the thing, though, because Mercy does have that alternate aspect to her gun.
But Mercy's bullets don't do any real damage.
No, so that's why you find where there's a lot of offensive going on. You keep those guys healed. You keep yourself at a considerable distance.
Yeah.
But you don't...
And that's what I do. But other teams are smart, and they will send out somebody to snipe the fucking healer.
Yeah, they'll send someone who is strictly on heal kills. Yeah.
Okay. And all I'm saying is, like, after the first time that, like, the rest of the team hasn't been taken out, but your healer's been taken out, that should be a clue. Hey, guys, they're gunning for our healer, so let's keep the tank.
Mercy's not the
on
only
the healer,
though, because you could be the Jamaican guy on the wheel, on the
Yeah, I'm not
blades.
Really good with Lucario.
But he's the healer, too, and has a better, stronger offensive.
Zenyatta and Mercy are pretty much who I run.
Okay.
If I run healer. Those are who I'm good with.
Okay.
I'm sure if I spent more time with Lucio, I called him Lucario, Lucio, I would probably get better with him, but I'm really good naturally with Mercy and Zenyatta. So that's typically who I run. Zenyatta's got a little bit better offense, so I tend to be able to hold my own a little bit better with Zenyatta. But I find that Mercy tends to heal a little bit faster. So, you know, typically I run in with a Mercy. And after, like, my second kill, I'll switch to Zenyatta. And then usually either my team will get smart and focus somebody on the heal killer to keep me alive so I can buff motherfuckers. Or they won't, and I'll switch to Zenyatta, and I'll try to defend my damn self and also heal at the same time. But yeah. But I don't play Overwatch when I'm sick, because it does actually require some skill
and
communication. And so, you know. So I haven't played Overwatch in like a couple months. So I haven't even tried the new character yet that's in Overwatch.
I haven't.
The Robo Toro tank chick. Haven't played that yet. But that's going to be on deck soon. So if you're on Xbox and you see Ninja Sista on Overwatch, say hi and let's play some games. So that's really like all the like little fun, like what's going on with me stuff going on. Obviously your birthday is coming up.
Yep.
This podcast will be released on your birthday.
Yep.
I'm just going to go ahead and get the birthday stuff out of the way for you because I know, like, it was coming. So I just jump on that grenade real quick.
The big 3-3.
3-3 is not big. 3-0 is big. 4-0 is big. 5-0 is big. And then after that, it's not big no more.
Well, I mean, for me personally,
that's when you start shrinking.
For me personally, though, 3-3 has been kind of a significant number. So for me, it means something, but in the scheme of life, it doesn't.
Right. For most people, 3-3 is not a big one, but this 3-3 is a big one for you.
Yeah.
Get it.
So.
Completely get it. Happy birthday, bro.
Thanks, bro. I feel so adult right now.
No, I know, right? You're paying bills.
Paying bills, married.
House, like your car's
paid off. No babies.
Yet.
Probably ever. Maybe. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe a new fur baby in the mix. Not sure.
Dude, you don't have any room for any more fur babies.
I know, right?
You're all out of room.
Yeah, no, with our cat and our two dogs, we don't have room for
you got no more room for fur babies.
No, we have
unless
enough.
That fur baby is a guinea pig.
You know. We were thinking about...
With that, you're going to have to set up massive track all around your house.
Yeah, that's true.
So and
that's
is that a project you really want your husband working on?
No. No, actually, I don't.
No.
Nope.
Because he'll make trap doors and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, he would.
And you'll have a guinea pig track that runs all over your house.
I'd be like, where is it? Oh, he's underneath
and
the toilet.
And you'll never know where your fucking
I'll
guinea pig is.
I'll never know where he is. But anyway, so let me get into front position here.
Yeah. I'm going to be player two for a hot second. It doesn't happen often.
I know.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate
it's the least
that sometimes
I
can you could take a step back so that I could take a step forward. It's so.
Two steps forward, two steps back.
I appreciate you. So first thing first, you had mentioned to me an experience that I needed to watch that you were surprised I didn't talk about that came out of E3, with that being The Inpatient, which is a VR.
Yeah, PlayStation Inpatient. VR. I believe I told you I was crazy surprised
that I was
that
not all about it. So
yeah.
I found the trailer for it pretty much right after I had my nerdgasm over The Evil Within 2. Moment, right. And I was like, what could top this? And then I watched Inpatient, and literally, as I'm watching the trailer, like, after, when it scanned down to the Santorium, like, I stopped it, my eyes got really big, my husband was like, what? And I'm like, Supermassive Games is giving us an Until Dawn prequel. And here's the proof right here in the pudding. Boom. Because you go into that Santorum as the fucking dickwad Josh... In Until Dawn, while he's trying to, like, not get his hand ripped off by traps and shit, I'm like, so clearly now we're going to get more in this, in the universe. Which is good, because I played the fuck out of Until Dawn. I talked...
Yes, you did.
Agnosium.
As a matter of fact, I believe that we did a podcast episode where you played the game, because I was not going to, but I watched you...
I think I played your, didn't I play your version of it? Because...
No, you played your version of it on my system.
Oh, okay, because I was about to say. Granted, I have to get my Until Dawn back because I gave it to another couple who got a PS4, and I'm like, it's scary, but it's really not that scary. There's, like, three places that, like, made me jump, and I get over, like, I have an overactive imagination, so, like... One happens at the beginning, these are very signature trademarks in the genre.
I'm sorry, every jump scare got me, okay? I watched...
No.
No, they did. Like, I watched three different people play the game on YouTube, because I did want to know, like, how people's stories could go.
Oh, man. Okay?
And...
Everywhere.
And I'll tell you what. You say there's three jump scares. No, there are three more jump scares.
No, there are... I was saying that there's three jump scares that definitely got me, because there's a formula to the whole horror games,
yeah,
movie genre.
The formula doesn't change your fucking body reaction, okay?
If you know it's coming, you should be more prepared to not react.
Doesn't matter if you're prepared or not, your body still fucking reacts when you don't like jump scares. And I don't like jump scares.
So,
okay? I don't like jump scares in real life. Like, when I'm walking down the street, I see a big-ass cricket and it jumps, guess what I do? It's a fucking cricket. But guess what I do? Every time.
You jump.
Because I know what locusts can do. I read the Bible.
Anyway, so, like, but I stop. I see Blackwood Sanatorium. I freak out that we're getting a prequel. Because if you played through Until Dawn, honestly, to get the full scope of what could happen on the night, really one or two things could happen at the end. Somebody
spoiler,
or...
just in case you haven't finished it.
But spoilers. Either... A, everyone could die. Actually, there's several things. Everyone can die, everyone can live, some people could die, and some people can live. But, you know, if you're a perfectionist, like I am, and you have several different playthroughs with all that type of stuff, there's really nowhere else that particular story on the mountain could go. So they really couldn't do an Until Dawn 2 with the same kind of premise, because there's not,
right,
I don't think there's anything new that they
people,
could...
different people may have lived or died.
Right. So, like, it would not work. Like, I know some people were like, oh, but they could totally do Dragon Age. So, like, Dragon Age, like, depending on what happens in certain stories, like, certain elements will play themselves out in later games. But this is too close niche of a story. Like, this has definitive book beginning, book end. Kind of, so you really can't play with that
thing.
Well,
I think the difference between Dragon Age and Until Dawn is, for Until Dawn to have a true sequel, they would have to decide on what one way is canon and then dictate that that's canon in order for the sequel to work, right?
Right.
So you either have to dictate that, spoiler, what's-his-face gets found out by everybody and everybody lives, so that everybody's available for the next game, or you have to pick one survivor.
Oh, wait,
and say
Josh.
that
Douchebag
is
Mike is
the
in the
canon.
Sanctorum, not Josh. Josh is the patsy. Rest in peace,
you know,
Josh.
And so for me, I'd be like, you know, if I was SCEA, I'd push and say that Hayden Panettiere's character needs to be the one that absolutely survives.
Well, she's the final girl. So, I mean, granted,
right.
They play with the they play with that trope so well in that game, because up until a certain point, she's completely untouchable until, like, the last chapter where she could completely
fuck up. MacGuffin.
She, yeah, like, I like that they played the trope. They played that to a really interesting point.
So they would have to set canon.
Yeah.
Before doing a real sequel. And with a game like that, if you set a canon, it kind of negates the choose-your-own-adventure-ness of the game.
Right, because then anything else you do outside of that canon is non-canon.
Right.
It doesn't
You know,
have
it's just
any
like Heavy Rain. Like, it's exactly like Heavy Rain, okay? You can either get everybody or nobody.
Oh, man. Perfect
to the end.
Perfect crime, baby.
Okay. And so which do you pick to set as canon? You don't. You leave it alone. You don't do a follow-up game. You move on. And you make Detroit. That's what you do.
That's what you do. You make Detroit.
You make Detroit.
Which I cannot wait to get my paws on. Like,
I'm going to be all over Detroit like stink on poop.
Like,
Detroit's probably going to be the game that gets me to go back to my PlayStation for a bit.
But only for a little bit. It's like a timeshare game.
Well,
but
it depends. If God of War is coming out before Detroit, because they're both 2018 games, I can't remember exactly where their timeline is. But if God of War comes out before Detroit, then God of War will be the reason that I go back to my PlayStation.
But either way, either of them gets you back onto the platform.
One of them is getting me back on my PlayStation for a limited amount of time.
But anyway, let me talk a little bit about what they're hinting at is going to kind of happen. And then clearly, you know, this is all speculation because they only showed, obviously, how beautiful and how, not exact, but how much in the Uncanny Valley people are. Because, like, that was the thing about Until Dawn is, like, everyone's like, like, it's close. Very close, but it's still not right.
Quantic has really set the bar very fucking high.
But this is Supermassive Games that we're talking about.
I know. And Supermassive is close, but, like, I gotta be really honest, okay? Supermassive, when it comes to their character design and representation in their game, they're not at the same place that Quantic is.
Very close.
They're not. They're very close.
Very close.
But yeah, there is some definitely uncanny valley stuff.
In terms of like how people look and how they shift and how they move. I mean, the technology is going to get there. Like, eventually, we're not going to know the difference between game, like, animation
and let's be honest, okay, Quantic gets there because they mocap motherfucking everything. And so they put extra balls on people.
More balls! That's the point.
They mocap with
Supermassive, you need to put more balls on people. More balls.
Right. Like, Quantic's tagline, Quantic, we mocap with more balls.
Like,
that's really a selling
point. But anyway, so going back to The Impatient, obviously it's a horror game with some psychological elements, very similar to Until Dawn, but this is Supermassive Games, so there's no surprise there. Apparently, we as the player will play as a patient with amnesia who is in Blackwood Sanatorium. And this is 60 years before the events of Until Dawn. We don't know how long the Wendigos have been, like, fucking shit up on this mountain. We don't know if whatever's happening at the Sanatorium is what...
Sanatorium. You keep leaving out.
I don't care. Syllable. It's the crazy place. It's the place that crazies went.
Rick Santorum is a fucking douchebag.
Yeah, and so is the shit that's going on at Blackwood. But clearly there's something going on at Blackwood that may or may not have been the thing that started the whole Wendigos on the mountain in the first place. We don't know that yet.
And if you haven't played Until Dawn, Wendigos are bad.
Yeah, so if you didn't play Until Dawn, bunch of high schoolers or even like maybe first few, high school, go up to their rich friend's house, they party, twin sisters get... Well, I don't want to say they get murdered.
College age.
I think they're high school. But they party. One gets really embarrassed. Twin sisters fall off a mountain and die. Air quotes. Older brother wants revenge because of the friends that they brought up to their super awesome chalet. You know, and does this whole elaborate scheme. And while he's playing film director meets Saw, there's something ominous also going on. Granted, there are totems, like these weird vision totems everywhere. Clearly, if I saw one of those and I saw like a flash of shit, I'd be like, fuck, there's some voodoo on this mountain. I'm out. Like, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm just going to backtrack. TLDR. Brother upset that his friends fucked over his sisters and got them both killed when he invited them for a good time. So he plots revenge, bringing them all back a year later to the place where it happened, and he was gonna, like, freak everybody out and scare everybody and make them, you know, remorseful for what they did. Did not plan on the fact that the mountain was inhabited by
Wendigos that
which are creatures that at some point in time were kind of sort of human.
They were people who ate people.
And then they became something else that continues to eat people.
Yeah.
And depending upon what decisions you make, you get eaten, destroyed by Wendigos.
Or you get shot in the face by your ex-boyfriend.
Right.
That could happen.
There's also that.
Sorry, Em, you were not my favorite killer. Character. Everybody hated M.
Like, I was okay with her dying.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if when she died of her own stupidity, I was like, okay, that's fine. But, like, when I had to go after the... When I went after the ending where Mike shoots her, spoiler alert, that can happen in the game. You know, like, I completely believed why Mike freaked out. I'm like, she got scratched. You don't know how it transfers. Like, and then fucking redhead there, Ashley, with her fucking knowledge, like, here's the book. Totally could save Ashley, you know, could totally save M here, but I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut and not say nothing. Because no one liked her anyway.
Because fuck that bitch.
Man, Ash is like, Ash is cold-blooded and savage. Yep. Yeah, like Ash is savage. You cross her, and that is it. There's no I'm sorry. Like,
no.
And it made me
you
sad. You
get a bullet.
It made me...
You,
no,
you
not even there.
Ash, you get a bullet in your head.
Like, Chris and her have this, like, will they, won't they? And, like, you don't know what's real or not. And, like, okay, yeah. So Chris puts a bullet, like, puts a gun to her face. But, like, if they don't, maybe they both get taken out. Like, you don't know. Like, you can't really judge Chris for his action. And the fact that once he pulled the trigger, nothing happened and they realized it was a joke, he constantly apologized to Ashley. So it's not like he was like, I didn't know what was going to happen and, like, held his nuts and, like, grunted. Like, he was completely remorseful for the action he was planning to take. And, like, she was like, fuck you. You wait until you need my help. See what happens. You know what happens? She doesn't open the door and you get your head cut off. That's what happens. When you cross Ashley. But this is Until Dawn.
Ashley. I mean, that's really the, like, moral of the story.
And the fact that she's just sitting there like, oh. Oops. What a bitch. But anyway, so you're a patient with amnesia. You're in Blackwood, I think, because of the fact you have amnesia. I think there's some testing going on. And the head psychologist who's, like, kind of there, the wackadoo doctor, is up to experimentations, which I think is what leads to... Or someone comes in with the Wendigo, like, symptoms that they're trying to explore and then turns into one, and then you're kind of being stalked by it while you're learning about all the things that are happening at Blackwood, which I'm all about, because you don't spend nearly enough time in Blackwood in Until Dawn. Like, Mike is walking through there and, like, is getting hints about this creature on the mountain. You don't explore nearly enough. So you clearly there's a history here. And, you know, what a great way to bring us back to the mountain that may make playing Until Dawn over again, like, it might breathe new life into the first installment of the game that we had, because maybe now you're like, aw, shit, like, they should have seen the signs. Like, where did the totems come from in the first place? Because, like, I can't imagine that came from Blackwood. Clearly it didn't. That had to be
But it could have come from somebody who was at Blackwood.
Maybe. Like, some indigenous person with this foresight to be able to... Maybe. We don't know. Maybe this game will allude to that and expand on the mountain altogether, which I think would be amazing. So, I have to figure out this VR shit, because I need to play that. Because
I was getting motion sick doing some VR experience as well. And I found that when I sat... versus tried to stand and do some, it was much better. And I had no issues whatsoever with, like, motion stuff when I sat versus when I stood. Because I think for a lot of people, what happens and the reason why they have difficulties with VR is because VR is completely immersive, right?
Right.
You got the goggles on that completely focus your view just on the screen in front of you. You have headphones on that are more times than not noise-canceling and Dolby sound headphones on your head. So you're now basically in a completely audio-visual cocoon, right? You have no perception of what's going on outside of you.
Right.
At all. Because you can't hear it and you can't see it. You have no light, you know, diffusion coming in or anything like that. You now are presented with... just what you can see and hear. You can't feel anything. So that right there is a deprivation of senses in a way, because you have no sense of depth other than what's being presented to you on these screens in front of you. And then you have your little controllers in your hands. And then as things start happening in the game, you start moving, but the only visual that you have is what's directly in front of you. And I think, at least for me, where I started to get my motion stuff is I'm used to my peripheral vision. I'm used to seeing the stuff in my peripherals to help me keep my balance and keep aware of where I am. You have no peripheral vision when you're in VR. And I think that's what ends up fucking with people so much when they're standing. It's because you have no peripheral. You feel and you start to feel unbalanced, especially as your body's moving around, because you have no sense of where it is safe to put your legs because you don't have that peripheral. Whereas where you're sitting, at least for me, I have no expectation of moving. I'm sitting. And therefore, the lack of the peripheral stuff doesn't bother me, because really when I'm sitting, I'm not actively using my peripherals a lot unless I, like, see something about to fall or whatever, or my dog coming because she's going to give me a kiss. And so I find that when I sit, and you can't for all VR experiences sit, because some are really designed to, like, make you step and move and, you know, that kind of crap.
Right.
But 90% of them, you can sit and still grab things, move things, and have your reactions. I feel like you're probably in the same boat as me. And if you sat instead of stood, you would probably be able to play like 70% more of the VR experiences.
Maybe. So maybe I need to tinker with it some more. But
yeah, that's... I would tinker with it, because as soon as I saw the trailer for The Impatient, I was like, if Amanda's not all over this game, then I don't really know her as a person.
Well, I'm your sister,
the way
so
I
hopefully
think
you
I do.
So that's the first thing that I'm very eager about, getting my hands on between that and Evil Within 2. Moving right along. So I've really been in that mindset where I want my games to also kind of give me an experience. Like, I want emotions to get invoked. I want to feel immersed in it. Like, I kind of want to feel like I'm the character that I'm controlling. I want to feel vested in this world that these developers and game houses are making. And I kind of have to thank my husband for this, which should be no surprise, because he sat me down earlier today and he's like, you're going to play everything. And I was like, what? Like, I don't have time. I don't have time for that. He goes, no, yes, you do. You're going to play everything and you're going to play it now. So literally, this is the game that came out of Double Fine. Double Fine Presents, along with the developer David O'Reilly, made this game called Everything, where literally it's a life simulator, but it's not like Spore or The Sims. It's like so much more in depth than that. Literally, like it's giving me gas just how intense this game has made me feel in the course of like several hours of play. But it's an interactive experience where literally everything you see in, I don't want to just say the world, because it's so much bigger than that.
Well, just stick with everything you see.
Everything you see is you. You are everything. Everything is you. And you get this ability. Granted, they don't tell you what you are. Like, your entity is like just energy. And you are allowed to ascend and descend and become things and learn how to interact with other things and how to become a group of things and how to break things apart. And you listen to the thoughts of all these things. And
so you're God?
No. You get to be the universe, essentially.
But you are everything.
You are everything, and everything,
everything
is you.
Everything is you.
And you could be countless things. There's over 1,000 things you can actually be. And it has a great soundtrack and narration by Alan Watts, who I guess was really, what is he? He talks a lot about Western and Eastern philosophies, and a lot of the little like audio nuggets that you get are pieces from his talks about like existentialism and existence and you're just like a spore. You're like a dandelion plant matter just floating around in like air near a caterpillar, and you're on like this microscopic level of existence, trying to figure out how your existence plays into all these other things. And at first, like, I started off as a moose, which was weird. And I had to find other moose and talk to them and, like, learn how to, like, dance and make more moose. But then I was able to interact with bigger bigger animals and become bigger animals. And then eventually I could become a tree. And then eventually I became a star in the sky. And then I became a nebula. And then, like, a quasar. Like, it got weird.
Quasar?
It got so weird for me. And, like, as I'm playing through this and I'm listening to Alan, this guy, Alan Watts, talk about existence and how people differentiate things, like, he's like, what's a thing? He's like, I stare at you and I see everything. And, like, the statements are just so direct. And, like, you feel it. Like, there is a resonance in this. And as I'm playing it and I'm listening to him say these things as I'm, like, a rock talking to other rocks or listening to the thoughts of other rocks, like, I began to, like, cry. Like, my eyes got wet and, like, tears began to stream down my face. Because he's like, you know, at the beginning, like, you...
Wow.
You don't realize that you are connected to everything. So that's why everything is you and you are everything. Because you start, you know, your brain starts developing, like, I and me and us and they. And it's not about any of that. We are all the same. Like, hands... And that's it. You know, and eventually you start getting, like, these little, you get these little thought bubbles and stuff that tell you, like, oh, like, you know, quasars and quarks or whatever, like, they can do a weird dance and then they can form something new. But you should always kind of be aware of where you are because you may have to, like, journey backwards. And, like, at one point I was, like, an ice continent and I was near a sand continent and then I became a sand continent. And then I went up in the sky, and then I got, like, the thing that said, hey, you should totally go back to you should go back to the green planet, the green continent you were on, like, at the beginning of the game, because there's something there that you need to descend into. So if you venture too far out, you don't know how to get back to the start.
That's actually really cool.
It is. It's on fucking Steam, bro. Like, I think right now, I think it's, like, $12. Like, it's on Steam. No, it's $461 right now, because there's a Steam sale. And, like, there's so much in this game. And, like, I'm very thankful that my husband made me sit down, because most times space games or whatever are not my stick, which he always tries to get me to play, and I'm like, no. Really not in the mood for that. And, like, he just sat me down and he was like, no, you need to sit down for this. And, like, it brought something new to me as a person. And, like, I'm not done. Because I was like, how do you beat this game? How do you go back? And, like, he's like, is that the point? Like, I'm like... Because, like, they talk about death and life and rebirth and stuff in this, and a lot of the things that you encounter are always, like, you know, existing is the easy part. It's learning how to die. And I'm just like, I don't know how this game definitively ends, and I think that's the point, is that there is no end, because the end is just another part of the everything, and you're everything. So it's kind of like that Schrodinger's, like, in this box, the cat's alive and it's dead. And, like, everything is everything and everything is nothing. And, like, blah, mind expansion. And, you know, right before my birthday, I'm like, fuck, now I'm all internalizing and shit. Like, my mind is just, like, I have all these questions, which is not something I normally have. I usually just, like, yes, no's, blue, red. Like, I like things that have a definitive start and end, and something like this that completely plays with the fact that you don't, but you do, but you don't. And just figuring that out is part of the whole process is really kind of, you know, awe-inspiring, to say the least. So if you have Steam, get this fucking game. Just get
it. But how do you really feel about it?
Like, get... I want other people besides my husband to have played this so I can talk to them about... Because, I mean, you never start as the same thing. Because when he saw that I descended down as a moose, he's like, I was an Appaloosa. And I'm like, a horse? So, like, he was a completely different thing than I was. And I was like, how does the game even figure out where your starting point is? But that's, you know, once again, that's not the point of the game. There's an experience here that I think everyone can benefit from. So... and the fact that it's under $5 when most people will spend like $8 on a latte, well, I think the experience of everything is a lot more valid than that $8 latte you're drinking. So find it, experience it. I'd love to talk to somebody else who's in this journey of everything, because I feel like it's too much for me to try to process with my one brain, but maybe with more brains, it would...
If you could throw more brains behind it, you would feel
better. I would feel better. Like, I don't feel bad about my experience, but I feel like, you know, like when
it needs to be a shared experience and you need someone to share it with that's
like when PT happened, like, everyone kept playing it and trying to pick everything apart and trying, like, everyone kind of came together, which doesn't often happen on the internet. To put their brain power together. Kind of like Eden of the East, where the protagonist, like, gets all these needs together to, like, crowdsource a solution for this bomb problem. And, like, it's like that. I need that to happen, but for everything. The game, not everything. So that's what I've been spending most of my time with. So very, 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 very last thing, and I'm gonna
step away from the mic. No, because it's my turn.
No,
we're almost out of time.
If you haven't seen Baby Driver, both you, sis, and our friends who are listening, go fucking see that movie. That's it. Your turn.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna very quickly, hopefully, get to both of my topics. One is an anime that I talked about a while back when I first started watching a couple of episodes, called Kado the Right Answer, which I'm going to talk about because it has wrapped. I'm going to say it's season. It could
just be an arc
season, but I don't think it will.
Okay. Well, tell us about it. What type of anime is it?
It's an anime. And then the other thing I'm going to talk about is Destiny 2. So I'm going to put that in the back. Because y'all know how I feel about Destiny.
Yes.
I'm sure you kind of want to know how I feel about Destiny, too. Because I got some feelings. Okay. So, let's start with Kado, The Right Answer, which was a manga that's been converted to an anime. You can catch it on Amazon Prime. It's on Crunchyroll. I don't know if it's on Funnyroll, but I believe that it is. Because anything that's on Crunchyroll is on Funnyroll. And I'm really not ready to call it Funny Roll yet, but I probably should.
It is Funny Roll.
But basically, the story of Kado follows this guy named Kojiro Shindo. Okay? And Kojiro and his co-worker, who's really his best friend, Shun Hanamori, are negotiators for the government. When there are disputes between basically the state government and, like, local businesses or whatever, they go in to try to mediate some kind of resolution.
Okay.
Shindo is known as one of the best negotiators to ever negotiate as far as the Japanese government is concerned. Coming back from a great negotiation where he ended up making a win-win situation for everybody that kept a business running and gave them the ability to do some futuristic things so that they could build for the future, not just stay running, but also that allowed them to bring in more money through taxes and whatnot, industry and jobs to the city. It made the government happy. They're flying back on a plane, talking about the great situation. Shun is going on and on about how he's looking forward to his vacation because they've been going nonstop.
Oh no, someone's gonna die.
And then this cube appears from the sky. And nobody knows what the hell this thing is.
It's an alien.
Bigger and bigger as it's coming down, and it actually overtakes the plane. And this is our introduction to the antagonist of Kado. Yaha Kui Zashahina. I'm just going to call him Zashahina, okay?
Okay.
I'm just going to call him Za. Okay. Zashahina is an anisotropic being. And what an anisotropic being is basically a alien.
It's an alien parasite.
Consciousness, not a parasite, is a consciousness that has been basically roaming universes since their invention, and you learned later on in the series, they kind of make universes. Universes are the equations and solutions they come up with for various ridiculous math problems that they give each other, you know, to keep them busy. But Zasuhina has come to Earth because he wants to evolve humanity, because he believes humanity has gotten to a point where they're ready to take the next steps. Subsequent episodes have him working with Shindo, because Shindo decides that in order to negotiate between the Japanese government and Zasuhina, that he needs to basically be the advocate for Zasuhina, because he doesn't understand humanity, and so somebody has to work with him to help him get the things he wants in order to have this balanced negotiation. So it's this very interesting thing where you have this human that is working with this alien life form that is trying to better understand humanity, but also advance humanity. And you initially think for benevolent reasons, but as you get deeper and deeper into the series, you realize maybe not so much.
Okay.
And what is very interesting is that it is a very emotional story, because you basically find, as you go through episodes, that really what is driving Zasuhina is an immense feeling of loneliness that he's not actually able to communicate until much later, because of his relationship with Shindo.
Okay.
But he continues to give humanity gifts that seem like they would be amazing things, but when you start to really think about how they would affect humanity, not so great. So, like, the first gift that he gives is these things that look like pebbles that are called Wham. And the Wham are basically a never-ending source of energy. They are the size of pebbles. They transmit no harmful emissions, but a single Wham, as an example, can power an entire continent for all of time.
So you can imagine. So everyone who works, like, in the electric business would have no jobs and no money.
Well, yes. You want to start extrapolating from that and start thinking bigger, okay? If every person had their own energy source that never ended, yes, energy companies would go out of business. Those spaces would not be needed anymore. But everybody has unending energy to use.
Social class structure would fall because everyone would be on...
It would be no social class structure, because you would now have, as an example, all of Africa on the same level playing field, because he just gives the Wham to everybody. First, he starts with just Japan, which makes the UN pissed, and, like, all the nations, because they're like, okay, well, Japan has an unfair advantage. They need to give all the Wham to us, and we'll determine what we're going to do with it. And people are like, no, we can't do that, because the superpower nations will just keep it for themselves. They won't distribute it for everybody on the planet, and we'll have this imbalance. And so Zasuhina is like, unless, like, you all learn how to make Wham, because you can. And he goes to this scientist and just, like, whispers in her ear. The next day, they have this press conference, and she takes pieces of paper and forms them into balls and slaps them together, and it creates a Wham.
Wow.
And they put this out on the internet so that other people across the globe can try it, and people start to have success. So it completely levels the playing field, because everyone has this knowledge now of unending energy. So it creates all kinds of other opportunities, right? If I have unending energy, then I can create all different kinds of water purification systems out in the desert, because I no longer have to have money to power the machines. I just have to have the materials to build the machines, because I have the power source. I don't have to worry about not having lights for my town or my city, because I can do that. I can now build electric cars and electric vehicles, even simple ones, because now I have an unending source of power. So it completely changes that structure, right?
Right.
And you can go into all different kinds of places with it. And I'm already, like, interested in, well, what are the implications of having a free, unlimited power source that is compact, that is available to everyone across the globe. They can make it themselves. They don't have to go to some place and barter for it. You start to think, well, shit, that completely then throws your whole system of money off if I have unlimited power. Because as long as I can procure resources, I can do and build anything because I have unlimited power, right? And that's just the first gift. The next gift is this gift that Zasuhina kind of hints at the end of an episode to Shindo is going to change humanity dramatically. And he ends the episode asking Shindo, hey, when was the last time you were sleepy? And he has, like, this look of, like, depression and being flabbergasted. And I even thought, like, holy shit. Like, I'm, like, 3 or 4 episodes in and, like, Shindo hasn't gone home. He's in the same clothes that he's been in since, you know, this cube landed on the plane. Like, it's been, like, 27 days. No, he hasn't slept. Why isn't he tired? And it's partly because of
the wham, right?
The second gift. Not necessarily just the wham, but the second gift, which I'm blanking on the name right now, but it basically looks like a brain. Like, if you took Stewie Griffin's brain out of his head and encased it in, like, a jelly, that's what the second gift looks like.
Okay.
And what Zasuhina does with the second gift is chops it up into pieces, and anybody that's looking at that, basically they phase out into the multiverses, and they start to understand the anisotropic universe and the way that it works and the beings themselves. And by having that understanding, they no longer require sleep. Because sleep is designed to allow the body to
process
everything that it's eaten, rejuvenate itself, rebuild cells, structure, blood vessels, all that kind of stuff. If you are in a state where none of those things expire or are needed, then you don't need to replenish them. Therefore, your body does not feel fatigued. Therefore, your body is not tired. You can now run forever.
So it kind of sounds like all these gifts literally are stripping away what humanity and life is.
Yep.
Because if everyone is completely equal and there's nothing to distinguish between what's
right,
what's
and left. That's the crux of why I started to fall in love with the series, because you have this being that's coming to advance humanity, and really what it's doing is
killing humanity,
ripping away the things that make humans and make them interesting. You find out as you go along in the series that this universe was created to solve a problem, and the problem solution that the universe worked out itself was humanity. And Zasuhina desperately wants to bring humanity into the anisotropic in order to actually advance the anisotropic. Because they themselves don't really engage with each other than to collaborate on solving these problems that come up.
So they need humanity to solve their problem. So
Zasuhina has decided that humanity is needed to solve this problem. So that's why it's called Kato the Right Answer. Because he's looking for this solution, and he believes that it is in bringing humanity to the anisotropic that he will solve for their problem of...
But if he takes away all their humanity, then it doesn't solve the problem.
Right, and he hasn't come to that
realizing answer. Right.
And so you have a point where Shindo realizes that's the problem and is now working on trying to get to a place where he can help Zasuhina get to the right answer. And then it goes into some very interesting directions after that point. And the way that they wrap it up is very interesting, because it does get to a point where Shindo presents Zasuhina with a different answer. And it is difficult for Zasuhina to understand. It is, I think, however, the right answer. And so I highly recommend, if you like anime series that definitely have action, but really are running on some deeper themes And not necessarily dark themes, because they're not dark. They're just very deep. It's very existential. You know, what makes you you? And just exactly how unique is that in all of the universes is a very interesting question for anybody to explore in a medium, but to do it through an anime series is very, very interesting to me. I think that the series is very well written. The voice acting is fantastic. And visually, it is stunning because it is a mix of somewhat traditional animation and a big chunk of CG. But it makes sense and it feels right all the way through. So I highly recommend that you check out Kado the Right Answer. It's a very, very, very interesting series. I will tell you that when I finished it, I watched the last episode 3 times in a row.
So you could try to make sure you wanted to catch everything?
No, I caught everything. I just enjoyed the journey to the ending so much that I wanted to relive it.
Okay.
So it's very clear. The ending and what is projected as the right answer is extremely clear. There's like one question at the super last end of the episode, so definitely watch through the credits. But it is completely clear what the answer is. Like, there's no mystery about anything other than a couple of questions that are also very ethereal. But the journey to get to the answer is absolutely fantastic. And it is not the way that I thought that they would get to the answer. And also not 100% the answer that I thought they were going to get to. So it's really, really, really interesting. The series made me think, and I like that. I like when, you know, any story makes me think, makes me come up with my own solutions. And then when I compare my solutions to where the solutions that the creators came up with, not that I'm disappointed in my solution, but I'm intrigued at how close, like, the tenets of my solution overlap with theirs, but how we differed. I find that interesting. So I highly, highly, highly recommend for anybody who enjoys, you know, a anime series that has a deep theme, but also has some really interesting, you know, light comedic movement moments, great animation, really solid voice acting, to check it out. I watched it subbed on Crunchyroll. I do know that it has been dubbed and there are English voice actors. For me, I haven't heard them yet, but I would stick with watching the subbed, and which you can do, like I said, right now on
Funnyroll.
Funnyroll and on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So definitely, definitely check out Kado. And then the only other thing that I have is, of course, I have to talk about Destiny 2. Now, I'm going to be talking a lot about Destiny 2 as we roll up towards release, which I think is September 6th, right? Yeah, September 6th. So here's the deal. Y'all know I love me some Destiny. I broke my Destiny addiction, but I had a Destiny addiction.
Right. We all have one.
And here's the thing. The thing that broke my Destiny addiction, in all honesty, wasn't me. It was PvP. Because they started forcing all the cool, interesting acquisition of weapons and things like that into PvP, which I suck at. And so it took all the fun out. Like, when you couldn't get the best guns and you couldn't get the best armor without constantly running Crucible well, you lost me. So, like, I didn't play the last... I really didn't play Rise of Iron, to be honest. I have it, because I paid for the season passes. But I didn't play Rise of Honor, just because they put way too much focus on Crucible and racing, and it just became so deluged, I couldn't stay focused on what I really enjoyed about Destiny, which was being able to basically play a massive single-player campaign co-op. That's what I liked. I liked the drop-in, drop-out. Like, I could just be in an area and informally team up with other people that were in that area to take out stuff, still get my loot, and move on and do my single pieces. Or team up with a couple of people to very quickly do some strikes and be able to find some weapons and gain a chunk of XP to build up my character. That's what I enjoyed about Destiny. It's mostly that I got to play with my friends and make some new friends along the way. That's what I enjoyed. And they started really burying that piece with the stuff to really appease the more competitive shooter folks, which that's fine, but that's not what I signed up for. And so that's why I started pulling away from the game. So when they announced Destiny 2, and then they announced that, oh, by the way, you're not going to be able to bring any of your shit from Destiny 1 into Destiny 2, I had some feelings. They were kind of strong. And for a hot second, I thought, I'm probably not going to play this game. Because do I really want to stir up all new heroes, basically start again from scratch, to probably play the exact same game?
And?
It's not the exact same game. And while I don't know that I'm going to spin up one of every class, I'm more than likely going to jump into Destiny 2 with a hunter. And here's why. For a couple of things. One, they have changed matchmaking a little bit. So you can now kind of looking for group on the Xbox side. It is built into Destiny 2. The, hey, I'm about to run this, so I'm looking for these types of players. And the matchmaking will do that. So if I'm, not in a clan, but I want to run the raid, I can pick that I want to run the raid, and based off of my class, it will start matchmaking me with the appropriate people to actually have a balanced team to go into the raid.
Oh.
Based on what the raid is. So I don't have to go out to Planet Destiny and be like, I need a Titan with a this and a Hunter with a this, and I need two Warlocks with this, at least this level, with these weapons. It will match you with those people. So, if there's a need for, I'm just going to say this because I don't know all the weapons for the new game yet, but let's say you need two Hunters with Gjallarhorns that are maxed in order to have a chance at being successful at a raid, it will match you with two players who are also looking to do the raid that meet that criteria. So you don't have to spend time friending people that you maybe don't want to be friends with. It'll ad hoc put you together. Which makes going after strikes and going after raids more amenable to me, because now I'm going to be paired with people who are doing the exact same thing as I am, which is looking for people to run these experiences with, but will balance me with people that will actually let me accomplish this. One of my biggest frustrations when I was playing Destiny would be I would, pick to do a strike that was a somewhat high-level strike, and I would get paired with somebody who was obviously OP for the strike, and they would look at me and be like, oh, you're not OP too, and bounce out.
Oh.
But that still left me with the strike to complete.
That sucks.
Yeah, it really did, because then I would have to sit and wait for somebody to show up, hope that they would stay, and that they would, have the right classes or, weapons equipped. Because, some people are just like, nope, I'm going to build up this skill. I'm going to build up this thing. So I'm just going to play with this one weapon. And it may not be the right weapon in order to be successful for that strike. But they're sticking with it because they're on a specific mission. So that's one thing that I like. Two is I do like some of the changes that they've made to the classes. So if you've never played a Destiny game before, you have three classes that you can pick from and build a character in. You have the Hunter class, which is very much your roguelike, quick, fast, ranged attack, but takes a lot of damage. You have your Warlock, which is basically your all-around balanced character. They do a lot of damage. They can take some damage, more similar to a mage. And then you have your Titan, which is your tank. Okay, a little bit slow, but can take a whole lot of damage, can deal out a whole lot of damage, and can also act as a good defense for your rest of your team. So a balanced team of three has one of each. A balanced team of six has two of each, right?
Right.
Okay, so each of those classes have some abilities. For the Hunter, they basically keep their solar class, the subclass, Gunslinger, with Golden Gun. There were some changes, a couple, with that. But they get a new subclass, which is arc-based, that's called Arc Strider. And this replaces Blade Dancer. I started having heart palpitations when I saw it replaces Blade Dancer, because that's typically what I ran all right. the damn time, was a hunter as a Blade Dance, because I was good at it. I sucked at Gunslinger, because again, I'm not a headshot.
I am.
Person. Okay. But the Arc Strider has a super that basically gives the hunter a electrified staff and boosts their speed and mobility. So for me, it finally kind of really gives the hunter a true ranged attack. Because to me, Golden Gun really wasn't a ranged attack. In order to like one-shot kill anybody, you had to be pretty fucking up close and personal with Golden Gun to take them out. Otherwise, it would do a chunk of damage, but it wasn't, you know, like a one-shot kill unless you were in close range, which kind of negates having a hunter class, right? Because I'm supposed to be good at ranged attack. They tried to address this when they gave you the, what was it? The, I can't remember. You know, it was a knight something. The bow.
I didn't get the bow.
I think. Yeah, I did get the bow. And the bow was better at ranged attack, but it still didn't do enough damage because you would shoot out 3 bolts. And so it was good for, like, pushing people back, but it didn't do a lot of damage. This staff does. And by boosting your mobility, it allows you to move around a bunch so that even if you have to get into close quarters, it should be a help and not a hurt. So I started getting a little more interested in the game. Warlocks have a new solar subclass called Dawnblade, replacing the Sunslinger.
Good. I was never a good Sunslinger.
However, the new super for Dawnblade basically gives Warlocks light blades, so like swords of light, like flaming swords.
Okay.
That you can use in midair, you can use on the ground. That's kind of like the Titan Sunbreaker.
Okay.
Okay. And then Titans still have their Striker subclass and Fist of Havoc, but they have a new Void-based subclass called Sentinel, and that replaces Defender, and it basically allows them to summon a super shield that can block enemy fire and be used offensively. Like, they can actually fling it out, kind of like Wonder Woman, when she flings her shield out.
Uh-huh.
Titans can do that as well. So it gives Titans also kind of sort of a ranged attack.
Okay.
So they basically have given Warlocks a up-close-and-personal melee with the sword super. They've given Titans and Hunters a ranged super, which allows them to feel a little bit more balanced to me, because they always, the three classes always felt a little bit off. Now, the story of the game is pretty much picking up from where Rise of Iron left off. And like I said, I didn't play Rise of Iron. But basically, there is a faction within the Cabral who have decided that the Traveler was wrong in giving the light to humanity. So they decided, fuck it, we're going to take it back. And we're going to just fuck everybody's Christmas. So under the leadership, if you want to call it that, of a guy named Gaul, they descend on the tower in droves, the Red Faction, and fucking proceed to wipe out the tower. They destroy the tower, damn near everything there. They kill a bunch of people, and they are able to basically zap the Traveler and take the light away from Guardians. So Guardians are no longer powered. And the game is basically Guardians that are left trying to recover skills and power to take out Gaul and the Red Faction and put things back to the way they were. So that's basically the deal. So it's still a shooter. Like I said, the matchmaker changes. come around. They've integrated clans into the game, so you can join a clan, actually, I believe, in-game, so you don't necessarily have to do it out in the app, which always was a pain in the ass to do, but you can. And when you are playing online, it makes it easier for you to, you know, join up with clan members to run through strikes, and if you want to go through PvP together, you can. The game definitely, when I got to take a look at it at E3, seemed to be running pretty fast. You know, one of the things that I always had an issue with was frame rate, because more times than not, my bandwidth and my NAT was stronger and better than most of the people that I was playing with. So when I played with people, I would get a natural slowdown for me, which made it difficult to play the game. Weapons get a different organization system in the new game. So instead of having primary, special, and heavy, you'll have kinetic energy and power weapons. So like stuff like hand cannons, as an example, will be classified as kinetic and energy weapons. Ones that do elemental damage will be in the kinetic pile. Things that have like arc, solar, or void will go in the energy pile, which makes sense. They're all different types of energy. Power weapons include your stuff like your heavies and your specials, like shotguns and grenade launchers. They've changed the names of the stats for armor. So instead of strength, intellect, and discipline, you'll have stats just for armor, recovery, and agility. When you see it in practice, it makes more sense to be like, oh yeah, this will let you recover better, and this will give you more agility, and this will give you more resistance, as opposed to intellect and discipline, which never really made sense to me, other than just get the numbers up in the first game. So there's some cosmetic changes to the game overall, but basically, it's a bigger, badder Destiny. And in all honesty, I'm okay with that. I don't know what all the locations are that are going to be, and I will more than likely not be in PvP. And if right now it seems like they're very focused on having both a strong single-player story campaign as well as a strong PvP environment, where Destiny right now just feels like super strong PvP, and by the way, fuck PvE, because y'all should have already been done with this but at this point, which feels very kind of throwaway to me, to the audience, and that's why I haven't been down with it. But I'm hopeful for Destiny 2. I have not pre-ordered it yet. I will more than likely be pre-ordering it when I get paid next. And I've been back and forth on whether I'm going to do it on the PlayStation side or if I'm going to do it on the Xbox side. And the main reason that I've been waffling back and forth is because, yet again, there's a timed exclusive of content coming first to the PlayStation side than on the Xbox side. That being said, the majority of my clan has disbanded. So if I spin up a Destiny 2, I'm probably spinning it up and being part of a new clan anyway. And I do have more friends at multiplayer on the Xbox side. So I'm waffling back and forth on if the year of timed exclusives is enough to piss me off. Because that was the main reason why I picked PlayStation first go round, because it was a new IP with Bungie. Was, well, if I'm going to get stuff first on the PlayStation, it's going to be like a year before I see that on the other platform. Why the fuck would I do it on the other platform? But I'm kind of in a toss-up. So if you guys have any thoughts or recommendations, or, you know, just want to tell me why I should pick one platform or another, hit us up on social at ESH News on Twitter or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. And let me know what you think. Which side you think I should pick? Because I'm going to be picking in 2 weeks from when you listen to this podcast. The other thing that also has me kind of interested is that Bungie actually got assistance from Vicarious Vision and High Moon Studios on Destiny 2.
Hmm.
So it's not just an all Bungie deal. And, you know, Vicarious Visions has done some very interesting games. You know, they did Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. They did, you know, the one Tony Hawk game that I really liked. They did Whiteout. They did Jet Grind Radio on the Game Boy Advance. They did, they did Jedi Academy, the Jedi Knight game. You know, so they've worked on some really different games, mostly doing ports. So I have a feeling that they did a lot of, like, cleanup work, which is something that Destiny 1 was definitely missing by, like, a lot. And they also worked on the Insane Trilogy for Crash Bandicoot, which, if you haven't checked that out and you're a Bandicoot fan, you really should. And then, you know, High Moon has worked on the two Cybertron Transformers games. They worked on Advanced Warfare, you know, and they worked on the first Destiny. So, you know, when you look at characters, I mean, if you haven't had a chance, definitely check out some of the gameplay videos for Destiny on YouTube right now that are from E3. The facial animations are better. The amount of characteristics that you can actually see on faces is better. I mean, I will be playing Destiny 2. The question right now is what platform? Mostly because they've made enough subtle changes to balance out the characters and matchmaking, which were really my two biggest pain points. Because it just got to a point where PvE wasn't interesting anymore. Like, you were just hanging around waiting for and hoping for a new strike or a new raid, because otherwise there really wasn't anything for you to do if PvP wasn't life. And PvP is not life for everybody. If you want to just make a PvP game, then just make a PvP game. Don't put a PvE experience in it. And then I won't be heartbroken about it. But if you're gonna make a PvE experience, and you're gonna sell me on a game first and foremost for its PvE experience, and be like, hey, we got PvP too, don't make PvP life. Because that's not what you sold me.
Right.
So, I'm not completely on the hype train yet for Destiny 2. But I think if I get a chance to be part of the beta, that may happen. I might get back on the juice. Because I'll tell you, when I was able to touch a hunter in Destiny 2, because that line was ridiculously long at E3, oh, it felt good to be home. Just saying, it felt good to be home. Which means, whatever platform I get it on, you'll have to get it on the same platform so we can play.
Hopefully it's PS4, because that's what I got. That's what I got, because he's got
there
one.
There might be
I got
an Xbox
one.
In your future.
Maybe, but even... Oh, yeah. Yeah, because then he's got an Xbox One already, and then I'd probably put the XS in the study with my PS4.
So I'm just saying...
Maybe.
Maybe. So we'll see how that works out, but let me know on social... I'm going to wrap it up here. It's a holiday week, so you can get some extra time. There's nothing wrong with that. If you enjoy this podcast, make sure that you subscribe. You can either do that directly from our homepage, electricsisterhood.com. The links are right on the right side to get the feed and subscribe in iTunes, or just bring it into a feed reader if you want to do it that way. You can also get the podcast through Stitcher Radio, through Google Play. You can get it in the iTunes, either on your desktop or through the podcast application on your iOS device, by searching for the S-Cast and subscribing. We put out brand new episodes every week, so make sure that you subscribe. Hit us up on social and let us know what you think about the episodes, if there are things that you want us to check out and cover. We're at ESH News on Twitter and Instagram. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/landofesh. If you enjoy what we do, then definitely make sure to bookmark our site. Check out our news and reviews. Everything's written by everybody on the whole team. And there's all different kinds of stuff that we cover, from portable to mobile, retro, and current games, as well as even a little bit of comics and some nerd culture. We got some cosplay stuff that we share too. Make sure that you're engaging with us all across the internet and hollering at us for the stuff that you want us to check out. We will be streaming games soon on Mixer, so there's more to come. There's so much more to come. So make sure that you're checking us out, as well as everybody else that makes up the Land of Esh. That's King Baby Duck over at b3crew.com with the No Borders, No Race podcast. If it's indie, if it's fun, if it's nerdy, KBD is talking about it and spinning it on his show. Make sure that you check that out. On Wednesday, smashrook.com. You definitely want to watch the homie Hamsterman 2049 play some games live on Twitch. You can be part of chat. And he plays everything, retro games as well as current stuff. And I'm telling you, there's nothing more fun than watching him go at it on survival horror games. It is a great time, so make sure that you check him out 9 Eastern every Wednesday. Unless it's posted otherwise, you can get the link really easily on smashrook.com or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh. For Thursdays, definitely check out the homie Phil the Issues Guy over at issuesprogram.com. You can find his weekly recap show, Phil's Recap and Review, on YouTube. It is some of the most enjoyable recaps I have ever watched. And I'm not just saying that because he's a homie. I'm saying it because I genuinely laugh my ass off when I watch his recaps. So make sure that you check him out. Especially the Sopranos ones, because those are really, really spectacular. But you can join chat live for any of his current shows that are going on and check out his whole archive at issuesprogram.com. Last, certainly not least, all the dudes that are checking things out, sharing it, and giving you the stuff that nerds crave over at nerdcrave.com. Comic books, video games, anime, manga, you name it, if it's nerdy, they are talking about it, writing about it, reviewing it over at nerdcrave.com. So please, please, please check out all of our sites, bookmark them, engage with us on social. Let us know what it is that you want us to cover, share, talk about, have as guests on the show, and we will make it happen. As always, I am Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Happy birthday, America! Bye!